Okay, back on the record. Mr. Simser, call your next witness.
Your Honor, we've been informed by advisory staff counsel that the company does not need to recall Ms. McCartan, so therefore we're going to call Mr. Greg Ford to the stand.
Mr. Ford? Mr. Ford, I think you were in the room earlier when I gave the perjury admonition, so if you just raise your right hand. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Ford, I have no prepared questions for you. Just want to make make everyone aware you are the person who put together the cost estimates and sort of the viability and feasibility of the Hankinson plant on behalf of the company.
I am.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Ford.
Afternoon.
My question's kind of straightforward, simple. Is it safe to say the CTs proposed in this ADP would outlast the PPAs that are being proposed in the Minnesota process?
Absolutely.
And do you know about how many years a CT is expected to last?
It depends on how they're operated. Number of hours of operation and number of starts are what we usually use as a factor in their life.
No, 12.
For these large frame combustion turbines, the general rule of thumb at this point is 5,000 starts for a peaker unit. If we assume 6 hours per start, and the capacity factors of 5%, it's about 75 starts a year. It's roughly 67 years. It's really three major overhauls is what you aim to get to with the machine. After that, you can inspect the machine, and if it's been properly handled and in good condition, it likely could run another 8 to 10 years, maybe more.
All right. Thank you very much. No further questions.
Mr. Armstrong.
What is your position, Mr. Ford?
I'm Director of Engineering. That's the short title.
Are you an engineer?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm here with Mr. Lee, and he's also an engineer, so I feel like I'm a go-between between two engineers here, so bear with me.
Good luck.
What are the engineering advantages of having generation closer to load?
It's a really difficult and complicated question. As the electric industry developed, there were a lot of municipal utility plants that served individual municipalities with their own generation, their own distribution. Over the years, the transmission grew to interconnect all of those municipals. And most of that small generation disappeared. And that was purely an economic decision. The economics of generation tend to go to larger units, central station facilities, with extensive transmission and distribution. As long as you can provide good transmission to a location, multiple lines, high reliability, I see no reason to require generation in any one location. It then becomes more of an issue of availability of fuel, water, land, and transmission access.
But are there some advantages, though, to having generation closer?
There are some. You know, as Steve indicated earlier, I believe locational market pricing is a reported number from MISO on a regular basis. Some areas do show higher costs than others due to transmission congestion primarily. But it's a constantly changing number.
Does it help the stability?
It can.
How so?
I'll use Denver as an example. We recently installed a synchronous condenser at our Cherokee station just north of downtown Denver. It is actually the heart of the metro area in Denver, not out in a rural area. But that plant had historically been running at pretty significant power factors for voltage support and power factor correction. We converted an old generator on a unit we were retiring, 100 megawatt unit, to a synchronous condenser to provide the power factor support, and it currently provides roughly 80 MVA of power factor support.
So would a CT help address power factor issues caused by relying too heavily on transmission?
It can, yes, but as a peaker, since it's not online more than a few hours at a time, it's probably not what I would call a good resource for power factor support. You need something that's available continuously.
Such as?
Either a synchronous condenser or capacitor banks.
Would you agree that voltage stability has been a significant operational issue in North Dakota?
I've been told that, yes.
Haven't there been operating agreements between the utilities to manage the voltage stability problems?
Yes, I believe there are.
Are you familiar with NDEX?
No.
What, an export constraint?
I've heard the term, but I don't know anything about it.
So I suppose you wouldn't know if adding generation at Hankinson would increase the index limits.
No, I do not.
Wouldn't more generation help address the voltage, more local generation help address the voltage stability problems?
Potentially it could, yes.
What do you mean by that, potentially?
Well, here again, it's...
Well, let me rephrase that. Why wouldn't it?
As a peaking unit, I would tend to say it's going to be more difficult to provide voltage support. You really need an intermediate or baseload unit to do that.
Isn't the problem on peak, though?
Not always.
Is it usually?
That I'm not sure of.
So it would at least help during peak times?
Probably, yes.
What happens to system stability if we lose a bunch of transmission lines from, say, an ice storm?
Well, you have issues with power supply in total. You may get to the point of having some instabilities in the remaining grid, voltage and frequency problems, power factor problems. Primarily, it would be load handling capability, is my understanding.
And couldn't a significant result of that be the Red River Valley going black?
It could. That could apply to almost anywhere.
And that's come close to happening in the past, hasn't it?
That I don't know.
Wouldn't a generation plant close by be a good option to have if that event occurred?
I guess I would recommend multiple units, not one, if that was what was the desire. Having one unit doesn't really improve much reliability in any system.
How about two?
Two doubles it, three might triple it. But you get my point. It would help to have multiple, not one.
Well, and I think maybe you get the point, too, that for, you know, maybe even if it's not something that's likely to happen or happen often, I should say, it's something that could happen, and there is some benefit, isn't there, to having some generation in the service area in North Dakota, whatever that may be.
Well, I believe Mr. Wishart answered that to some extent. There are significant generation resources in the state. They don't happen to belong to Northern States Power Company. But those do provide some of the redundancy of the system overall.
Are they located in the Red River Valley?
I believe there's a couple of small generators in the Red River Valley. I think most of the generation is west.
That's all the questions I have.
Commissioners? Questions?
Me, Your Honor.
No. None?
Mr. Fedorchak.
Well, Mr. Ford, you've been sitting here most of the day.
Yes.
Listening to this discussion, and we've asked, and several times questions have been kicked to you, so I'm just going to ask you generally.
Thank you.
What have you heard that you would like to comment on or refute or add to in the discussion this morning about the issues we're considering here?
I would have to say I generally agree with everything that was put forward today. I didn't write down the questions specifically that were redirected toward me. So if you would like to ask any of those questions directly, I'd be willing to answer them. I don't remember each one of those directly.
Can't remember them either. I was hoping you might have something you were just dying to add that you hadn't been able to say yet.
Oh, I think I pretty much addressed it with the life of the units. That was one of the keys, I think.
So you helped evaluate the... Did you develop the proposal, the company's proposal for the Red River
yes.
Valley? And how did you feel when the competitive proposals came in and you took a look at them? Do you feel that, you know... How do you feel about the competitive ones as compared to the Red River Valley?
I'll start by saying I'm not allowed to look at the competitive proposals. I am treated internally in the company like an outside proposal party.
Okay.
It's completely independent. We developed the proposals in our engineering construction group and submitted them to resource planning in parallel with the outside parties. And complete independence was the intent.
So these had value to you. You came up with them, and now the company is kind of leaning away, it sounds like, here and in their testimony to the Minnesota Commission. What are they going to be losing as a result of that?
Well, obviously, I'm in the engineering and construction group. We like to build things. We provide capital project services to all of our operating fleet, generating fleet, including our renewables. We would like to continue to develop the fleet, expand the fleet, replace retiring units. That's not always possible. It is our aim to be cost competitive, and I believe with Black Dog 6 we were able to show that we are. We're not always able to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we had a couple of proposals that were apparently quite good from competing parties. Again, on existing sites, which does provide some benefit, as we've also shown with the Black Dog project.
What attracted you to the Red River Valley? Why did that location appeal to you?
Well, we looked at a number of different sites in addition to the Black Dog 6. We looked at two additional units at Black Dog, potentially. We looked at another site that's titled Blue Lake. We talked about Granite City, which is near St. Cloud, as a possible site, and dropped it because of space constraints. We looked at several locations in North Dakota, partly in response to requests to at least consider North Dakota, and what we found was there were some attractive potentials for siting. We started in the Fargo area, the west side of Fargo primarily, and the sites generally looked good, somewhere along the 345 line that's currently in construction. The problem we ran into was the gas supply was somewhat limited, and this was before WBI announced their major line expansion. We didn't know about that far enough in advance to take advantage of it. Although we had talked to WBI in the process. We moved farther south along the 345 line to Henderson as a possible site. And we would have needed to bring a line from the Alliance gas pipeline north to that location. And we looked at close to the Alliance pipeline, which is adjacent to a 230 kV Otter Tail line. That appeared to be more cost effective to us at that time, and that's why we chose that location. And we compared that against the others that we had been evaluating. It appeared to be the best additional option for the second and third units that we needed to offer into the resource plan process.
Best just on cost?
Life cycle costs, our expectation of life cycle costs, not just capital costs.
Okay. What were your marching orders when you were assigned this task of coming up with proposals for the company?
Propose up to 600 megawatts of peaking capacity.
Without any consider, that's it. Any place?
Find some sites, generate the proposals for the projects, and get them submitted within a roughly a six-month time period.
Okay. And so your role was just to look at sites cost, and not system operations, how it integrates and the factors that it might play one location over another on system operation.
Well, we did work with the transmission access group within the company to evaluate the transmission impacts at the various sites. That was a factor in our selection process. We had done a lot of preliminary work at the Black Dog site over the last 6 years, trying to come up with various options to repower that facility. We knew what the cost would be for transmission access there very well. We went out and studied a number of other areas. When we established a potential site, we would talk. Well, we actually talked to transmission access first and said, where are good locations? Are there some substations we can tie into that would make sense? And then we tied that in with a possible gas pipeline options to establish general locations for sites.
The transmission impacts you were considering, again, were those just related to ease and cost of accessing the grid? Or what would you mean by transmission impacts?
We actually hired an outside firm, Excel Engineering, to take the transmission grid model that they work with MISO, and to do some preliminary studies on what the potential grid impacts and costs would be at various locations. And that's what we used to help determine what sites we would put forward.
What were the benefits or the value? What did that study show about the location in Hankinson?
What it showed is that Unit 1, we can build a switchyard to interconnect with the 230 kV line. And there were two impacts that possibly would show up on the grid. One would be a 345 kV build-out that was already in MISO's plan, therefore no cost to us. And the other would be an upgrade of the 230 kV line if we went to the second unit, but not for the first.
Okay. Does MISO have any input, or do they care one way or another where this power comes online?
Well, sure. We would have to file a generation interconnection request with MISO, which we have not yet done on any of these sites.
But from system stability, have they provided any input at all in terms
until
of...
Until we file that study request, they don't do any work on it.
All right. I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
Oh, Commissioner Ford, but our check got to it, so I'm good.
Okay. Mr. Calk?
No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Zensi,
nothing further.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Ford, your testimony, the pre-filed testimony, and from the stand, there's a lot of talk about cost efficiencies. You've now seen the other proposals. The company's negotiating on those. Is there any way that that you can go back and cut costs $2.2 million in your proposal?
Actually, I'm not allowed to.
For what reasons?
I haven't seen those proposals directly. I've seen the public version of them that's filed with the commission only. I'm not allowed to see the trade secret versions, so I don't know all the details. Probably never will. But part of the conditions that the Minnesota Commission put in place was that any proposal we put forward, we were stuck with. We're not allowed to change it.
So there's no way you guys can go back in and cut costs here and there in your proposal to make this more cost effective?
There may be, with some additional work, that's a possibility.
What kind of contingency amounts are setting aside for the Red River Valley project? Do you recall?
Yeah, I know what they are. I guess I have to ask, is that part of our trade secret
they
data?
Are. That data is trade secret. It is reflected in the trade secret record now, those contingencies, but if you want to close the hearing, we can discuss them.
Okay. I think we're fine without them. So.
Okay.
That concludes my questions.
Mr. Armstrong.
Nothing further.
Ron, I had a follow-up ask Mr. Rell's question.
Chairman Calk.
I tried to not throw it out there, but it is an intriguing scenario, though, where if the North Dakota legislature decides to continue to cut taxes, one of the things that I understand that made this project so enticing in North Dakota was our low tax base. Mm-hmm. And so if our tax policy changes going down like it has been in Minnesota, it keeps going up like it is, those benefits will never be seen. So the reality is Minnesota's created a, in my opinion, a scenario that they'll always win. What would you think about that? They'll always win in an out-of-state greenfield scenario.
My plan would be to resubmit in the next resource plan and take advantage of those if possible.
But don't you think there's a scenario that, given the constraints that are built in, that you can't go back and adjust to what's in the ground? You've got a scenario where Minnesota will always be able to pick their in-state resources?
No, I don't believe so.
They know what the price is, and they can continue to get down to whatever they need to do to beat your price.
Sometimes I feel like that's the case, yeah.
And back to my Jarhead days, you'd have a cost to build something for $100, and you'd go buy it, and there'd be 51 change orders. And so if you enter into a cost with these people, and that's the way the deal gets inked, my guess is that if the change orders come, that you have to pay.
We have had instances where we've refused to accept those.
But you've also had
projects have failed as a result.
But you've had instances where you've paid for those change orders too, I believe.
I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Ford, I think we're done with you.
Thank you.
Anybody else for Mr. Ford? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sepsi.
Oh, absolutely.
The company has completed its direct case. We reserve the right to recall witnesses on rebuttal from advocacy staff's case.
Okay. Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to call Mr. Mike Diller to the stand as our witness. And Your Honor, do you happen to have a copy of staff exhibit one? Okay.
It was. Is it the same?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yesterday or the day before? Mr. Diller, you've also been here the whole time, so just ask you to raise your right hand, take the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Diller, I believe you have before you what has been marked as Staff Exhibit 1, which is your testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you have any changes or adjustments, edits you need to make to that?
Well, you know, not any significant changes, but it probably wouldn't hurt to make it more accurate, I guess. That one's not material enough. This one's probably too picky, too, but on page 10, line 5, part of the externality values I list there, I wrote nitrous oxides, and I think the more correct term is nitrogen oxides. I think everyone got what I was saying. Then on page 11, just to be technically correct, line 20, I wrote the difference in PVRR. You know, we can leave that alone because, as Mr. Wishart's testified, PVRR and PVSC for these things really aren't much different. So let's just leave that one alone. But line 21, I believe I should have used 50 million, not 60 million. And that's
page.
I'm sorry. What's that?
Which page was that?
Oh, still on page 11, line 21. Instead of 60 million, 50 million. And I based that on Steve Wishart's direct testimony before the Minnesota Public Utility Commission, Schedule 4, page 9. I think we may have looked at that during his testimony. And I guess the only other change I would make is on page 12 at the bottom there. I saw a sentence last night when I was reading through my testimony that really didn't make much sense to me, and it's my testimony, so I thought at least try to make a little more sense of it for you. And so I would maybe rewrite the last sentence something to the effect of perhaps the issue of gas availability and the price.
This is at line 25 and 6, is that correct?
25, right, beginning in 25, and I'm just going to kind of rewrite it here for you. Perhaps the issue of gas availability and the price of gas near Fargo will be resolved so that the plant could be, and scratch out a lot of words there till you get to located, leave located and located closer to NSP's largest load center. I think that'll make more sense than what was written there. And that concludes my changes.
Other than that, would all the answers that you provided in the pre-filed testimony be the same today if I asked you each and every one of them?
Yes.
Would move admission of the amended testimony as provided by Mr. Diller on the stand?
No objection.
No objection.
Staff 1 will be received.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Diller, do you have any opening statements for the commission?
You know, I don't think I need to make a big opening statement here. We've been here for 6 hours. NSP has laid out its case. I guess I could say that it's been a very unusual hearing. It appears that I'm in the position of advocating for the company's case, and the company is arguing with me about it, arguing against their case. And so it's a rather unusual hearing, a very unique one, and I would just say that I still think that my solution for getting generation built in North Dakota makes sense from a lot of perspectives. It offers a lot of flexibility to NSP in timing of building generation, and it does kind of put a I'm asking for a hard decision from the commission so that Minnesota commission knows that that's just going to take place. It's just going to take place, just like the things they've ordered just took place, and now we're paying for them. And so, you know, I want that to happen. On the other hand, I don't want to harm NSP. I want to give them plenty of time to acquiesce to the commission's desires and the needs of its citizens. And I think that 20 years to do that seems pretty fair-handed from my perspective. I guess I could kind of address some of the things I've heard today. It seems like the company has spent most of its effort telling you all the things that could go bad with the ADP that they've asked for. You can also have good things that happen if you build Red River Valley. I guess I'll just make my points as we go along through cross-examination and questions from the commissioner rather than just talk.
All right, thank you. With that, I tender the witness for cross.
Mr. Simpson.
Mr. Diller, thank you, and thanks for sitting here for all 6 hours. I just have a few questions. I do appreciate your testimony and your interest in both ensuring generation gets built in North Dakota, but also providing the flexibility. And it's those issues that I think I'd like to talk to you about. Your main purpose behind your recommendation is this concept of energy security. And when you're talking about energy security, are you really just saying that one more energy resource in the region would just help keep the system reliable?
I believe local generation does provide a benefit to energy security and energy reliability, yes.
And you also believe that the CapEx Fargo line will also provide additional support for that?
Indeed.
Okay. And you are aware that the company's proposal to build in Hankinson is still some distance from Fargo and Grand Forks?
70 miles is my understanding.
And there is generation, currently intermittent generation, closer than that to the Fargo load centers.
If you're talking about Otter Tail's Hoot Lake plant, I think it's a few miles closer, yes.
No, that's
fair. It's a rather small coal plant that would never meet the needs of Fargo or Grand Forks, but nevertheless, it is a few miles closer.
Okay. And I guess all I'm trying to get at really is you would agree that no matter where the generation is located, that it still requires a robust transmission system to keep the area reliable.
Certainly. We need both.
I think that's fine. Now, let's talk about the company's proposal.
Sure.
Would you believe it fair to say that the company is proposing to add capacity resources to its system to meet some sort of forecasted demand?
That's why you would add peakers, so yes.
And, would it also be fair to say that you agree with the company's proposal to move forward with Black Dog first because of its significant cost savings?
Well, as you know, we can't afford to pay $60,000 for a strategist model, and none of us would know how to run it if we could. And so I have to take Mr. Wishart's work, and we can ask him and cross-examine him and ask for different scenarios, and we can do those kinds of things. But so when I say that I think Black Dog is the next unit that should be built because of the relative difference in cost, it's based on a large part of the work that he's done. We've asked lots of questions of Steve, and I don't have any reason to doubt that, given the fact that it's a green a brownfield site, and there's a lot of equipment and building structures and transmission lines already in place. I don't have any reason to doubt that, I guess.
And so does that really mean that cost-effectiveness should be part of our considerations with all this?
Cost-effectiveness should always be considered, yes.
All right. Let's talk about some of the flexibility your proposal provides to the company.
Okay.
I think your pre-file testimony fairly characterizes that, well, tell me if you agree, that my read of your pre-file testimony is that you do give the company some credit for trying to build generation in North Dakota.
Yes. I mean, it's in my testimony. The company's trying to own wind generation in North Dakota, and I think you've maybe already entered into the PPA agreement in North Dakota for wind generation, and you started out with a strong position on Red River Valley. I think the company is hearing our desires and needs for North Dakota.
And do you think part of the flexibility you're looking to build into your recommendation is based on the company making efforts to try to move towards building additional generation in North Dakota?
Well, I would hope so. It's hard to tell sometimes. this proceeding makes it hard to tell just, you know, exactly how serious the company is. And even if the company is absolutely serious and Red River Valley is its number one goal, without support from the Minnesota Commission, I just don't see how we can ever expect anything different than what we've received in the past. It's kind of like the definition of insanity. If you keep doing the same thing and get the same results every time, you might consider insanity. So I'm trying to come up with something different than what we've done the last 105 years. And so I've tried to provide a solution that I thought NSP could live with and the commission could live with, the consumers of North Dakota could live with. I mean, there's more punitive solutions to things like this, but, you know, we're from the Midwest. We try to work with people, and if you can get to a situation where both sides win, then that's a good thing. But eventually that's exhausted, and so whether we're there or not, that will be the commissioner's decision.
No, absolutely. And you've heard Mr. Ford's testimony and other testimony throughout the day that shows that as the new infrastructure is being built in North Dakota, that proposals in the state can become more cost-effective than they have been in the past. Would you agree with that?
I think that that's probably true. The Williston Basin pipeline that we've talked about would add to that. And again, that's the flexibility that's in my proposal to provide for those kinds of things.
And I guess in addition to timing and what I believe I hear from you is cost, I think the other, you know, you mentioned in your pre-file testimony is that the amount of time that you are proposing to give the company would allow it to integrate it into its resource plan. And I guess my question for you is, would that include, you know, making sure that whatever generation we do add to the system is consistent with a capacity need that we may have to make sure that those match up?
We don't want to build capacity that we don't need. However, we don't want to get in a situation where Minnesota keeps ordering capacity in Minnesota, and so we never get to the point where capacity is needed, right?
And, I mean, it sounds like would you be willing to work with the company? And Ms. McCartan has made offers to sort of work with staff to set the parameters about how we can implement your recommendation in a way that makes sense for everybody. Is that something you'd be willing to consider?
Well, I think I told you the answer on the telephone yesterday, and I don't know that I've changed my opinion since. I'm always willing to work, always willing to work with people and try and find solutions. I feel like I'm a fairly creative person and have been able to do that in the past. This one, I'm not sure I see a way to do this to the sufficient enough to impact what Minnesota might or might not do. Absent a direct order from the commission or legislative action in the chambers to require something, I'll work with you, Zeb and Laura and anyone else, but I don't see how a settlement would accomplish that. but I'll work with anybody on anything.
Well, fair enough. I just have one last question just to complete out the record. And as you were putting together your testimony, did you review any reliability studies with respect to deliverability in the Red River Valley?
Well, you'd have to define study. I've been studying this for 25 years.
Did any particular study with respect to the level of reliability in the Fargo-Grand Forks area?
Well, I have 25 years of life study on this. I've met with your engineers. I've handled customer complaints. I receive emails from Mr. Cedarquist and Mark Nisbet when the system has got some reliability problems. I provided you a real-life experience living out in the middle of nowhere, and the value of local generation. There's a few cases where, and I think that Mitch Armstrong made the case for Jerry, that there have been times where the reliability of energy in the Fargo area was very suspect, and the company was worried about it, and CapEx is part of the solution to that. So it's not like we can pretend that we've never had any concerns in the Red River Valley. Not too long ago, a year or two ago, NSP was replacing or refurbishing towers with their transmission lines that run into town. The particular poles had two of their three owned transmission lines running into Fargo, and unbeknownst to them, a contractor decided to work on a substation in Fargo and tripped the last transmission line. And as a result, over lunch hour, Fargo, most of Fargo, did not have energy. And so would one or two gas turbines located near Fargo have prevented that? I don't know. I haven't studied that. All of my testimony is not based on a technical engineer's study of the system. It's just based on my 25 years of working here at the commission.
Nothing further.
Mr. Armstrong, do you have any questions for Mr. Diller?
I do. You talked about your 25 years working here at the commission. What's your role been during that time? More specifically involved with your concerns about reliability in the Fargo area.
Okay. Well, I've been a public utility analyst the whole time I've been here. I mean, I've had some other jobs along the way, like taking care of the commission's accounting, internal accounting, and things like that. But the most recent example of reliability has already been talked about by Commissioner Kalk, and that was working with the company to develop some goals and some rewards and penalties for reliability. I've met lots of times with their people to talk about the robustness of transmission more recently than 25 years ago, but I'm not sure what you're looking for.
Well, what I hear you saying is you haven't, gone to some detailed study, but your on-the-ground experience leads you to have some concerns about reliability.
Right.
And do you think those concerns would be addressed or at least improved on by having more local generation?
That's the basis of my whole testimony. I do believe that there is some value to having local generation. I think that Mr. Ford finally kind of got to that a little bit. In my discussions with engineers and there's some value to local generation to provide kind of a frequency anchor to keep the cycles at 60 hertz. You know, there's we've talked about lower line losses already. You know, and own these this issue of own generation. You think about it, we've heard some of the witnesses say that the costs are more expensive for these own generation units up front. Well, yeah, they are, because you own them. And then you write them off over time, and so the cost declines over time. We just heard them talk about some of their older CT units of 39 to 44 years old. Wouldn't that be great to have an asset paid for after you're 35 and then have them still working for you 9 years later and running? These are current. They're not. They haven't expired or anything. They're still going. And so there's value in local generation. There's value in hard steel in the ground that you own that you get to flip the switch on. There are values to local generation. And
I gather the problem that you're seeing in your role is because of the two jurisdictions involved in the different processes involved in each, that the Minnesota locations keep getting priority over greenfield spaces in North Dakota.
Yeah, Mitch, it's a good question. It's not an easy spot to be in for a staff member working with a company that has 5% of its business in North Dakota. It's not easy. It's not easy for them. It's not easy for me. Because I have to swallow hard when we spend $1 billion or more for metro emission reduction programs. You know, you think about 5% of $1 billion is $50 million. It's not a small thing. You know, that's our share of the Metropolitan Emission Reduction Plan. Seabed, you know, the company company committed, I think, in 2010 to get 500 megawatts of seabed in Minnesota, community-based energy development. It's for the commission, because you guys are fairly new. You probably do know what it is.
No.
Okay. Basically, for the most part, there can be bigger ones, but for the most part, business wants to put a windmill, you know, on its building, or a farmer wants to put a windmill in its field, or... And so they're very small units and, of course, as you might imagine, expensive. If you just build one windmill, it's a lot more expensive than if you build a farm of them, and that's why utilities build farms of them. But and those seabed costs are running through the fuel cost adjustment. We're paying for 5% of those. Yeah, over time you get pretty tired of the one-way street. And so I've tried to take the biggest swing I could on this one, I'm not backing down if that's what you're asking me to do.
I want to make sure that I understand, though, kind of maybe the reason for the issue, and it's probably going to be maybe one of the longest questions you've ever heard in your life, but. At least how I've heard the testimony today from the witnesses and through the testimony is they're here for an ADP on these three projects, but they have to go through the Minnesota capital acquisition process. And they actually, that involves a bidding process that, at least as far as these projects goes, includes a bunch of third parties proposing generation in Minnesota. And then NSP is at least proposing the Red River Valley. Now, there's no existing generation in North Dakota, so the stuff in Minnesota is brownfield, which is generally cheaper to build than greenfield, which is, I guess, logically have kind of concluded, as long as it's all continuing to be brownfield versus greenfield and cost effectiveness is the main factor, you're always going to go default to the brownfield. Am I missing something there?
No, I think you'd be wrong, and that's what a lot of this discussion has been about. I mean, those brownfield sites are really the same price as a greenfield site in Hankinson. I mean, for all practical purposes, $2.2 million difference between the cheapest one that and the Red River Valley unit. To me, there's no difference in price.
And so the difference then from your perspective would be get some generation here because it does stabilize the system some for not too much difference in price.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just paraphrase maybe the company's position here today is we don't think $2.2 million is worth putting generation, giving you local generation in North Dakota. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. And I gave you ideas of I gave you some very specific examples of maybe just how if I can you know $2.2 million out of $45 billion worth of present value costs. I mean, think about that. You'd have to what is that? That'd be 1/200 of a percent. You know, you think about the rate case that is in process right now. One ROE is worth more than $2.2 million just in their 5% business in North Dakota. So maybe what the commission should do is give them 10% on the rate case instead of the 9% they were probably thinking about, and you'd pay for the whole difference right there. I mean, I could give you, I guess, I tried to give you some very specific reference points to show just how insignificant this is, and so do you have any other questions for me?
It sounds to me like you think the Red River Valley portion of it should be higher than included in plan 3, 4, 5, or 6 and should be higher towards the top.
Indeed, there is no difference between all these proposals, and I suspect that Gerald Ford would find a way to save $2.2 million if he was given the project to build.
Greg Ford.
What's that?
Gregory Ford.
Oh, Gregory. Oh, Gerald.
He's with the president.
That guy has a museum in Grand Rapids.
I'm like, was
Michigan.
He here?
Yeah. Well, his presence is like that of Gerald Ford. and so, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What?
Okay, so China, I'm going to... Our issues for today are ADP and PCNN.
Right. I believe the commission should grant the ADPs the company has requested and the PCNN that goes along with Red River Valley with some direction as to how that's to be carried out. That is my testimony.
Because you want the generation built in North Dakota.
Absolutely. And right now, the only unit that I would show preference to, is Black Dog Unit 6 because of the cost differential. I think that's a lot of money, a lot of cost difference.
And so one of the, you've heard the questions today of the way the company's proceeding through this with the Calpine and the Invenergy and then going to the Red River Valley.
I have heard that, yes.
And it's obviously too early to tell whether either Calpine or Invenergy is prudent. They're not even asking for that at this point.
Yes, they haven't asked. They haven't asked for an ADP on those. Yes.
My question for you is: if in an ADP proceeding, if we cannot just order them to build it, does your opinion change?
Then I would. I think I guess you've caught me off guard a little bit here, but I probably would suggest that you grant ADP nonetheless, but the requirements might be different. You might order some protections for customers, require that the company inform us immediately of when they start incurring costs to build Red River Valley Station, so that we know what the company's told us we don't know in the future. And I agree, we don't know all the answers. It's a tough business, right? If we had a crystal ball, then we'd all be rich and we wouldn't be here today, but we don't. And so we work hard at making our best guesses. And I appreciate the best guesses that the company has made. And I've accepted their best guesses. I've just turned a little bit. In my opinion, $2.2 million is not enough to not build in North Dakota.
That's all the questions I have.
Questions from the commissioners. Chairman Cog.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike, for your testimony. You and I visited a lot over the last 5 years, haven't we? I've only heard your voice the same way it is today one other time. We're in the MDU raid case. And the same kind of issues. It was tough issues. But that raid case with MDU set the stage for a changed MDU. And so we'll see what ends up happening here. A couple of follow-ups to what Mitch was asking about. Not so much Mitch, I guess, all of it, but the... You talked about how, you know, you've obviously got good experience in the job you do, and there's some questions you had from their counsel about how, you know, the CapEx line is going to help Fargo, but wouldn't it also work the other way, that by putting this gas plant somewhere in North Dakota, that CapEx electrons can flow into western Minnesota and help out the western part of the Minnesota grid?
Yeah, I thought that maybe the company was... I think the company was a little short-sighted on their view of Red River Valley when they were talking about it'll only run 5% of the time. Now, when you put those gas turbines in Fargo, then the next step is going to be arguing to convert those to combined cycle units, which will run a lot more than 5% of the time. And so, in answer, were you part of Big Stone 1?
I lived
and breathed Big Stone 1. Well, as you may recall then in that hearing, the engineers told us that when you have hundreds of miles of line between the coal fields of North Dakota and the Twin Cities and Chicago,
you need your clothespin in there.
You want something to pick that system up in the middle of that long run. And so true combustion turbine might not add to our export capabilities immediately, but long term certainly has the potential to do that.
But you would contend that this plant would also benefit customers in Minnesota as well because of the reliability it could gain to western Minnesota?
Yes, I really haven't thought about the Minnesota side, I guess, but...
Okay. You said something, Mike, too, about the... You said this commission could have more punitive solutions. I was just curious what you meant by that, because... I'd like to know what you're thinking.
What I'm thinking there is, the commission has been given the authority not only over service but over rates, and it's been designed that way. So if you don't get the type of service that you think your people in North Dakota need, then you have some recourse. And so, you really don't want to punish companies through hard rate decisions. You'd only do that if they refused to provide the kind of service, the level of service that you feel is important and good for the citizens of North Dakota. I mean, a real specific example might be, let's say you're in a rate case and you think 1 CP, 12 CP, you know, I could go either way on that. Well, there's $20 million worth of difference between ordering 1 CP and 12 CP. And so it's a rather large hammer. I'd call it what they say in Congress. I'd call it the nuclear option to some degree. But you have rate authority, and it's been given to you for a purpose. It's a monopoly service provider, and sometimes you have to use that authority.
So in your testimony, you've made, this is paraphrasing, basically North Dakota Commission previously has always played nice with Minnesota Commission on things that they put in Minnesota rate design that we've allowed North Dakotans to pay for it. Maybe it's time we quit using that North Dakota nice until it comes back our way. That's the way I think you paraphrased or you said it.
I think that's fair. I'm that kind of a person. I can be pushed a long time, and then when I finally have enough, I push back a little bit. And so this is kind of a culmination of a lot of water that's gone under the bridge, and I think the commission's in a position to take a hard position if it chooses to do so.
Fair enough. You were here when, I don't remember which witness it was now, I asked the question about how they use the strategist model, but then they always use their own gut and intuition at the end that if the strategist model doesn't quite play out what they think because of their experience, they may go a different way. Do you remember that testimony?
Well, I don't think I was quite as brash as that, but...
No, what I'm saying is that you heard...
My testimony you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about, we heard the company say that.
Oh.
And what I'm trying to take it a step farther is that what I'm hearing from you is you're telling me you've been working the issue here 25 years, and you feel, based on all your experience, all your work, on all the different cases we've done, that you really think these gas plants are what we really need for long-term reliability based on all your experience. That's what I'm really hearing.
Let me be fair to NSP. There are lots of transmission lines in the Fargo area. I'm more familiar with that than Grand Forks. And that provides a lot of energy security. I don't want to be that one-sided. But local generation, I mean, that to me is almost a common sense kind of, I don't need a study to tell me that local generation is a good thing to have. And my experience for 30 years now tells me that. And my experience is based on talking to NSP and MDU and Otter Tail and engineers. And I go to conferences and seminars. And so I've been around the block a couple of times.
Okay, and then last question, Mike. Do you have any just thoughts on why, let me back up, let me rephrase that. Have you dealt with cases like this before with the commissioners you've worked with previously where you've got this quasi where the company will come in and ask for an ADP on something and then something will pop up in Minnesota that kind of derails the whole generation? Is this the first time that you found yourself in this scenario?
I've never been a part of a hearing like this, and a case like this. This is rather unusual. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mike, in those trips around the block over 25 or 30 years, has Minnesota state government, between their commission and their legislature and governors, always been quite assertive, or is this a new phenomenon of the last decade or so, or what?
Well, as far as, I mean, a lot of the assertiveness has been around the environment, and when the environmental movement kind of took over in Minnesota, I don't know if I can give you a date specific or anything, but in the early years, it's a fairly new phenomenon, I would say, in the last 10 years of my work life here at the PSC out of 26. I don't remember too many of these issues before that?
From working with NSP as well as Otter Tail Power being in Minnesota too, do you feel like you really understand Minnesota's environmental goals and strategies?
Well, I understand what they are.
Because I really don't, and I sit here and I look at NSP representatives, and I feel sorry for them trying to work effectively in a multi-jurisdictional area like this. We sit here and we talk about all these actions by Minnesota, and you mentioned the Metropolitan Emission Reduction Plan. I'm more familiar with the externality issues. They have the requirement for a certain amount of renewable energy. And so they seem to be so worried about fossil fuels, and yet what I see here is them covering North Dakota's landscape with wind turbines, and every time there's any fossil fuel production in discussion, they not only insist on it being in Minnesota, they plop it right down the heart of the biggest metropolitan area in several states. And so it would seem to me, based on all their environmental efforts, they would be the ones wanting the gas plants out of there and the wind farms in Minnesota. So I don't even know what their goal is here that the people that are before us today are trying to achieve for them. And I can't imagine what it's like being on NSP's side here.
I think it's just as frustrating for them, if not more so, than it is for me. I've complained about my own feelings today, but they are between a rock and a hard place. But I caution the commission to get in the position of, we can't do this because it might not work in Minnesota, because Minnesota does not think about what North Dakota wants when it's in its deliberations. And so, as a matter of fact, NSP has chosen to provide service in two different, very different jurisdictions. They've chosen that. They could very well sell their North Dakota operations to perhaps a company that is more in line with the environmental concerns of North Dakota compared to Minnesota. I mean, there's lots of solutions to this problem. And so to your question, though, I'm sure they're frustrated. They're frustrated sitting here listening to me and you talk, and rightfully so. They're not in a good position, but you know what? North Dakota has to get its too sometimes, and so...
If you were writing the order, and requiring the Red River Valley facilities, there was discussion, I don't remember which witness brought it up really, about availability of gas when the proposals were being developed as opposed to what might be available within these next coming years. So are you recommending an order be written that there be those facilities built in the valley, or do you think that it needs to be clarified that it is this Hankinson facility?
Right. Well, you can tell that I was a little cloudy on that issue right at the end of my testimony. I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't want to do something that would bring the whole case into some kind of legal problem. And so my recommendation is to just approve the ADP as filed with some kind of language that provides flexibility and further consideration down the road. I know that's where you'll have to work with your counsel. And my attorney will have to write a brief and maybe provide a proposed order that after more thought has been put into it. But I agree, it's a little challenging. But on the other hand, I wouldn't steer away from it just because it might be challenging or that the lawyers can appeal it. In fact, appealing the order would tell you something about where the company is. So,
okay, I have nothing further. Thanks, Mr. Diller, for bringing your creativity to this process. Sure.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Couple of questions for you, Mr. Diller. First of all, just playing devil's advocate a bit on your proposal. Do you have any concerns requiring construction by a date certain?
There's always concerns when you require something when you don't really know what need will exist. There's always concern there. What I tried to point out in my testimony is that, and we've talked here today, MISO changes its reserve margin calculation 1 year, and it swings it by more than one of these CTs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many different things that can affect need in the future, but if you look back over time, generally capacity needs have increased over time. And so 10, 20 years out, I think it's fairly safe to think that the company's going to need another 430 megawatts of power. And if that's a concern to you, you can play with the numbers. Quite frankly, I pulled the numbers out of the air. I thought 20 years, that's a good number. If you wanted to make it 25 years, you could do that and give them more flexibility. But my desire is that it be certain, whatever the number is chosen, that it be certain. So that, remember when they were doing IRPs a while back and they'd tell us they're forcing wind into the model? Okay, force Red River Valley, end of the model. Done.
Okay. What do you make of the company's assertion that after we looked at the head-to-heads on the Red River versus Calpine and Red River versus Invenergy. I cannot say that word. It's a weird name. Where it shows that the assumption that the power purchase agreement goes away and then there's this huge cost for building a new gas plant at that, or gas generation at that point, or new generation of some sort, brand new, that kind of weighed it to the Red River model, gave that extra weight, or made it more valuable. Do you have any concerns about that assumption? Because you could also look at it assuming they could renegotiate that power purchase agreement, which would then therefore make the Red River project more expensive.
We don't know if that would be possible or not. We don't know what the value of electricity would be at that time. It's just another scenario that they've brought to your attention, in this case, to disfavor Red River Valley. But you could easily just make the opposite, that if the energy prices change between now and 20 years later, it could be, it could turn out differently.
Okay. Is this type of a proceeding, this ADP, is this the best place to facilitate and to try to order this action? Or is there a different time that this might be more effective?
I don't know when that time would be. I think this is the time.
Okay. So the ADP. Then do you have, Mr. you talked a little bit about this with Brian, but The CTs, I noticed the 5%, you know, capacity or 5%, what do they call it? That they were only going to be running 5% of the time, basically. So, and Mr. Ford talked a bit about this in terms of if your goal is to stabilize the grid, the peakers are not the thing to do that. So why wouldn't we hold out for when they're replacing some of their base load and then make the big case for North Dakota?
If that's your decision, I would respect that. I guess I just...
But tell me why we shouldn't do that.
A lot of times these kinds of moments are few and far between. The moments when you have some authority and some pressure and some reason to stand up and say, we want something for North Dakota. Those moments don't come around very often. And so I would be worried with that, and that I certainly will be gone and you might be gone. And, mm-hmm. And will the next people be able to carry the ball? I don't know. I know you can right now. So I think Commissioner Fedorchuk, that a combustion turbine in the Red River Valley, if you get it, there'll be lots of reasons to convert that to combined cycle in the future. And so you really want to get that thing located in North Dakota.
Okay. And then my final question, the Minnesota proceeding on this is moving forward, and we intervened. Well, we didn't. You did intervened on that. Will advocacy be doing anything more on that? Is our case been made? Is there anything more that can be done to make the case more poignantly to the Minnesota Commission about where we stand on this and what we think is important for them to consider?
Well, you commissioners travel in circles that I don't, and so whenever you catch them, you should talk to them about it. I didn't go and actually testify in the Minnesota case because it's in front of a not to disparage hearing examiners, but, but it was in front of a hearing examiner, and I wouldn't have had the attention of the commissioners themselves, and so it was just a cost of time, cost of traveling decision that the parties accepted my testimony. It's in the record. It's there for anyone that wants to read it. Hopefully the Minnesota commissioners took a look at it. I don't know if they did or not, but I don't plan to do, at this point, any more work intervening or arguing in Minnesota.
Are you aware of any more opportunities to do that, or are those opportunities over?
Well, the biggest opportunity is over. The commission has decided that we're going to go with these two Minnesota plants, and I don't see any reason to get involved in that.
But the commission hasn't made their decision yet?
Nope.
And they'll be the ultimately making that decision and picking the... Right. So your feeling is that since the company advocated for what we've talked about today, the decision is kind of made?
I mean, if I see an opportunity and the Minnesota Commission is still considering Red River Valley, perhaps I would get involved. I'd have to look at it and see, is there some value? What are the possibilities of impacting the Minnesota process? Those kinds of considerations.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Okay, Mr. Norrell, this is your witness, so I'm going to give you the chance to redirect.
Sure, thank you. Mr. Diller, you're here today as an advocate for the ratepayers of the state of North Dakota, is that correct?
That's correct.
We've heard a lot of talk today about the state of Minnesota and the process that's going on there. irrespective of that process, do you think that the Black Dog CT and the two Red River Valley units proposed by the company that are here for ADP today are prudent investments on behalf of the company?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
I'm going to give Mr. Armstrong the next chance, and then I'll go to you, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Armstrong?
I have nothing further.
Okay. Mr. Simpson?
I have nothing.
I have nothing, Your Honor.
Then you may step down, Mr. Diller, I think.
I'll click in. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your complimentary remarks about hearing officers.
That was part of my evaluation yesterday by commissioners that I needed to work on that. But I've only had a few hours to work on.
With that, Your Honor, advocacy staff would close its portion of the case.
Mr. Armstrong, are you... is your case closed as well?
I have no case, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Simpson, anything in rebuttal?
No, we don't plan on recalling any witnesses, so we rest.
Okay, and so as far as anything else for the good of the order, we're going to have at least one late-filed exhibit. Is that right?
We'll have one late-filed exhibit, which includes all of our analysis with externalities excluded, just to make sure that the record's clear on that issue. And then I would request... discussions with counsel as to briefing and next steps as they may deem appropriate, and we can work that out if that's okay with Your Honor.
Why don't we take about 5 minutes so you can do that, and then we'll come back and we'll have closing remarks from the commissioners and we'll finish up.